Well, happy Thanksgiving Sunday, everybody. And this is a moment and a weekend that it's good to stop and remember what's happened in our lives, how many actual ways God has shown himself faithful to us in the last year, and to reflect and realize that there's many reasons why we can be an extremely grateful people. And I hope that you get to celebrate that well today with friends and family. I want to welcome you here to our worship service. If you're new with us, maybe you've been coming the last couple weeks or couple months or last Sunday, we're glad that you're back again. And may God bless you as you spend this time together. And I think it goes without saying that the ultimate reason why we can be a grateful people is because we've been given the opportunity to live in the ultimate of incredible locations and places. And I'm not talking about our country, although that could easily be part of the blessing of God. But I'm talking about another location, another place where we can live. I'm talking about the ability to dwell in the actual presence of God. In fact, you and I were created to live in the presence of God. Did you know that? God's original purpose in making you was that you would live in communion and fellowship with him forever and ever and ever. And so in this lifetime, we get to taste that. We get to learn how to live in the presence of God. So that as eternity unfolds, we'll step right into it. It'll be natural. And true faith is all about that. It's all about having an encounter with the presence and the glory of God. And we're in a series called Supernatural Faith, and we've been discovering how we can have a vibrant and life-fulfilling relationship with God through faith. And today we're shifting the conversation somewhat in this series away from what faith can do for you. We've been looking at that for a while now. And we're going to begin shifting it to what really faith should be motivated by. You see, faith is not just a tool to use to get something from God. We don't just go to God and say, oh God, I'm going to believe you for this, and thank you, I got it. And when I need something more, I'll get back to you. That's not the purpose of faith. The purpose of a supernatural faith is to take us on a journey to have an encounter with the presence and the glory of God. Real faith is all about that. Now, we're going to invite the host to make available house Bibles. If you want to follow along in the scriptures, the text will be up on the screen. And if you don't have a Bible, this will be our gift to us. Just put up your hand or just make eye contact. They will get you a Bible so that you can follow along. But today, I want to entice you. In fact, I want to whet your appetite for something more, an encounter with God's presence and God's glory, perhaps that you've never had. And I know that some of you will be enticed to that. Some of you will be intrigued. Some of you will be challenged. You might even be inspired about what the scriptures have to say about this, because you were made to live in the presence of God. Can you remember that? You were made to live in the presence of God every single day, not just once a week, not just every now and then, but every single day. In Exodus chapter 33, we see Moses dealing with this issue, and he's kind of wrestling with the whole predicament of where are they going to live and where are they going to end up as the people of God. Reminds me of something that happened yesterday. I was with my wife. We went to pre-vote, and we did that for a certain reason. We had to get it done, and we went to this poll station, and because our address has changed in the last year, you have to go through this rigorous process of showing where you live, and I didn't have any ID that said that. We have one bill that says we live here, and so my wife actually had to take an oath that she knows me. It was kind of a weird experience. So there was a moment when she paused, and she said, yeah, I do know him. Okay. So I got to vote in advance, which was awesome. But it made me appreciate how much attention that our government pays to where citizens live. It matters where you dwell. I think it also mattered at the time of Moses, when the people of God were journeying through around Mount Sinai in the wilderness, and they were wondering about their final destination. So in Exodus chapter 33, you can turn there. Let me just sort of introduce the context for us. This is after Moses has gone up on the mountain to receive the Ten Commandments. He comes down from the mountain. He sees the people worshiping a golden calf. He gets upset. So he smashes the Ten Commandments stones on the ground. He thinks it's over. God is going to get rid of these people. They're not going to receive the blessing. And then in verse 1 of chapter 33, the Lord said to Moses, leave this place, you and the people you brought up from Egypt, and go up to the land I promised you to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. Down on the end of the verse, but I will not go with you. When Moses heard that, he was greatly moved. God is saying, you know what? I'll still give you guys the promised land, but I'm not going with you. You go there by yourself after that golden calf incident. So Moses is really brokenhearted, and what he does is he sets up a little meeting place for him and God. It's called the Tent of Meeting. It's outside of the camp of Israel. And in chapter 7 or so, it talks about that. And whenever Moses went out there, then God would meet with him. This cloud would appear, this pillar of a cloud swirling. The tangible presence of God would descend right outside of that tent of meeting. Verse 11, the Lord would speak to Moses face to face as one speaks to a friend. That's the kind of encounter that Moses had with the presence of God. Then in verse 14, you can see the words on the screen. Well, it goes like this. The Lord replied, "My presence will go with you, and I will give you rest." Then Moses said to him, "If your presence does not go with us, do not send us up from here. How will anyone know that you are pleased with me and with your people unless you go with us? What else will distinguish me and your people from all the other people on the face of the earth?" And the Lord said to Moses, "I will do the very thing you have asked, because I'm pleased with you and I know you by name." Then Moses said, "Now show me your glory." By the way, that I think is the boldest ask of any human being in the Bible. Show me your glory. And the Lord said, "I will cause all my goodness to pass in front of you, and I will proclaim my name, the Lord, in your presence. I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion." But he said, "You cannot see my face, for no one may see me and live." Then the Lord said, "There's a place near me where you may stand on a rock. And when my glory passes by, I will put you in a cleft in the rock and cover you with my hand until I've passed by. Then I will remove my hand and you will see my back, but my face must not be seen." So Moses gets up early the next morning. He goes back up the mountain with two new copies of the Ten Commandments chiseled out for God to complete. And he goes up there and he meets with God. We pick it up in chapter 34, verse 5. "Then the Lord came down in the cloud and stood there with him and proclaimed his name, the Lord. And he passed in front of Moses, proclaiming, 'The Lord, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands, and forgiving wickedness, rebellion, and sin. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children and their children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation.'" Verse 8, "Moses bowed to the ground at once and worshiped." Wow, what an encounter with God. What a moment on a mountaintop. Can you imagine if you were the one that God had invited up Sinai to receive that kind of revelation? We were created to live in that presence, friends. As amazing as it sounds as we read the scriptures, and we go, "Wow, I don't know if I could ever handle that." We are created to live in that presence. The same God that descended upon Mount Sinai is the same God who dwells in his body, the church. We're to live in his tangible presence. Mark Batterson, in his book, All In, talks about a famous musician. You probably know his name. It's Johann Sebastian Bach. And he says this, "Bach was to classical music what William Shakespeare was to English literature, and Sir Isaac Newton was to physics. Bach's body of works included 256 cantatas." And this is what he says. "Listening to Bach's music is a rapturous experience, but it's not just because of the melodies and harmonies. It's more than the mere combination of notes. It's the motivation behind the music. The reason toccata and fugue in D minor or mass in B minor touch the soul is that they came from the soul. Bach's cantatas did not originate as music. They were prayers before they were songs, literally. Before Bach started scoring a sheet of music, he would scrawl JJ, Jesu Juva, at the very top. It was the simplest of prayers. Jesus, help me. Then at the completion of every composition, Bach inscribed three letters in the margin of his music. The three letters were SDG, Soli Deo Gloria, to the glory of God alone. This became the rallying cry of the Protestant Reformation, but Bach personalized it. His life was a unique translation of that singular motive. So is yours. No one can glorify God like you or for you. Your life is an original score. And then he says this: imagine if filmmakers and politicians and entrepreneurs followed suit. What kind of an impact would we have if our scripts and bills and business plans originated as prayers? Imagine students scribbling SDG on their essays, mechanics etching SDG on mufflers and motors, or doctors scrawling SDG on their prescriptions. It's not about what you do. It's about why you do what you do. And ultimately, it's about who you do it for. We're to live for the glory of God. Every single thing that we say and do is to be all for His ultimate glory. We're to get used to that. We should be able to say Soli Deo Gloria over our lives every single day. Because we were created to be in God's presence. In fact, it should be strange for us to not be living in His presence. And the glory is only revealed, the presence of God is only revealed to those who long for it and those who are brave enough to live in it. Not everybody wants to live in the tangible presence of God. And what is meant by this whole idea of glory anyways? The Bible uses that word a lot. And the word glory comes from the Hebrew word kabod, and it means weighty, heavy, density. And it's a fitting description of the palpable, tangible presence of God. It has weight. In other words, God has substance. He's not just a temporary being. Some people picture God as just sort of a vaporous, kind of invisible non-entity, but God, in His essence, has substance. Not physical substance, but eternal substance. And every now and then, God manifests His glory to be seen by people. It means to us that God has a presence. He has a tangible weight to His essence, which He shares with people, which He gives glimpses of. You might think, well, I thought God was everywhere. How can He be somewhere if He's everywhere? That's a good question. David prayed in Psalm 139, where can I go from Your presence? If I go up to the heavens, You're there. If I go down to the depths of the earth, You're there. In other words, anywhere I go, there's God. And that's true. We call that God's omnipresence. There's nowhere where God is not already existing. God has to be omnipresent, or He couldn't be God, because then something else would be omnipresent, and we know that that omnipresent being is God. Either He is supreme and greater and more transcendent than every reality in every realm, or He isn't God. But He is God, therefore He's everywhere. God's already in your house. God's in your car. God's sitting in front of you, behind you. He's here. You can't see Him with your eyes, but His presence is everywhere. But then it gets better, because God also manifests His presence in certain places and certain times for His people. And one of those places is the church, where He's present, where He dwells in a special way. And it's His manifest presence that we are created to live in. You might say, well, I don't mind living in the omnipresence of God. I still get to do what I want. And there's many people in this world who do that. They live in the omnipresence of God. They don't really know Him, believe in Him, trust in Him. But we're called to live not just like in the omnipresence, but in the tangible presence of God. And that's where the joy is. That's where the peace is. Moses knew that. Moses knew instinctively that if that presence did not go with the people of Israel, they would be just like everybody else. So he pleads with the Lord, don't send us up from here unless You go with us. And in his mind, he meant the pillar of fire and the cloud that were tangible demonstrations of God's presence. Moses knew that if we're going to walk by faith with God, it means walking in a real relationship with this tangible presence of God. Faith leads us into that. And in fact, we can never really be satisfied with anything other than the presence of God. We may look for satisfaction in lots of other areas. We may search for it, want it, and desire it, but satisfaction only comes ultimately from God. So let's explore what that means, and I just want to prompt you with a few brief questions here today as we think about living in the presence of God. The first one is this: do I long for God's presence? Let me say that again. Do I long for God's presence? Is that the biggest thing to me? Is it the most important thing to me? When I wake up in the morning, is my first thought, who texted me? Or is my first thought, God, another day with you. This is awesome. Do I long for his presence? Are you touching base with God's presence periodically? At least once in a while. You see, this brings up the issue of your desires and what you long for and what your heart aches for. And you might say, honestly, well, I've got a lot of things that I desire and I want to have in my life and places I want to go and things I want to accomplish. And I get that. You know, some of those desires may have been put in there by God. But those desires in themselves cannot replace the great satisfaction that comes direct into your soul and your spirit through the presence of God. You might think, well, I don't know if I can get there. I have these big, big desires that fill my life. Well, the problem is not that your desires are too big, but it's the opposite. C.S. Lewis, in his famous book called The Weight of Glory, put it this way. He said, indeed, if we consider the unblushing promises of reward and the staggering nature of the rewards promised in the Gospels, it would seem that our Lord finds our desires not too strong, but too weak. We are half-hearted creatures fooling about with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea. We are far too easily pleased. I know I can relate to that. There are times that I allow my affections to go on something that isn't going to last forever, and I get all excited about it, and then after a while, the feeling wears off. But there's a greater motive to live for. Psalm 16:11 says this, you have made known to me the path of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence. That's the location, right? You will fill me with joy, where? In your presence. That's where I can bask in gladness. With eternal pleasures at your right hand. So what we crave for and long for and desire deep from within our hearts is ultimately only satisfied when God's presence touches our life. So Moses, he was fearful that day when the Lord said, you go and I'm staying here. And he interceded for the nation, which is what we must do as people, right? We've got to intercede, stand in the gap for the nation, so that God will do something in the whole of the people and not just one or two. John Piper put it this way, God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in him. God is so satisfying, isn't he? He's better than the best thing that you can have in this life. I remember my wife and I were at a resort a year ago in Mexico. We were just having a great holiday and I'm swimming in the pool, and I'd been reading the Bible for 3 hours straight, and I'm paddling on my back, and I'm going, God, you are even better than this. You're so awesome. And yet we get to enjoy those earthly things. They're good. They have their place. They bring a smile to our lives, but they're not as good as God. You were created to live in the presence of God. And there's a rhythm of movement in creation that's tied to these things being dependent on God's presence. Back to Mark Batterson, he says this, every single atom is a unique expression of God's creative genius. Did you know that the electron shell of the carbon atom produces the same harmonic scale as the Gregorian chant? Or that whale songs can travel thousands of miles underwater? Or that meadowlarks have a range of 300 notes? But the songs we can hear audibly are only one instrument in the symphony orchestra called creation. Research in the field of bioacoustics has revealed that we are surrounded by millions of ultrasonic songs. Supersensitive sound instruments have discovered that even earthworms make faint sounds. Wow, didn't know that. Lewis Thomas put it this way: if we had better hearing and could discern the descants, the singing of seabirds, the rhythmic timpani, the drumming of schools of mollusks, or even the distant harmonics of flies hanging over the meadows in the sun, the combined sound might lift us off our feet. Wow. Everything in creation is tuned to be in alignment with God's presence. That's why it says in Romans chapter 8 in the New Testament that creation is groaning and longing for its day of redemption. What's it looking forward to? The day when the presence of God will renew the earth. We're called to live in that presence. This is not just when you die and go to heaven and you get to go into the presence of God. No. We're talking about now. We're talking about today. We're talking about this moment. Psalm 84 is one of my favorite psalms. You can turn to it. The worship leader there, he describes this experience he has of entering into God's presence. In verses 1 and 2, he says, "My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God." Now think about that. His heart and his flesh cry out for God. He's saying, my body is aching for God's presence. Even our physical lives are tuned to resonate with the sound of God's presence. And then it also says, he goes on there to talk about in verses 3 and 4, he talks about his lips and his hands being engaged in worship, that he lifts up his eyes, that he's worshiping with a whole physical expression. In other words, as we do that, God's presence can touch our physical lives. I think that's awesome. This last year I was at a conference and there was a lot of people there. There's people from every nation, it seemed like there. Probably about 52 different nations were there. And we were singing our hearts out. And one of the strengths of this conference is it's worship. So, you know, you're worshiping for an hour, standing, hands raised, eyes tilted towards heaven, just enjoying God. And you know, there's just so many different people that were just full freedom to worship. Some were dancing, some were laying on the floor. And later on, they introduced the different nations there. They said, if you're from Canada, stand up. If you're from Australia, stand up, and so on. And so we got to have a bit of an idea of where people were from. And I remember this one group of people because the next time we had a worship service, I realized they all sat together and they didn't express worship. Now, I'm Scandinavian, so I can say this. They're from Sweden. And they just sat there. They're like, we're not going to lift our hand. We're not going to use. They finally stood up on the last song of the last session and kind of just made a little bit of effort to say, we're in this too. And it was like, wow. Everybody else was just lost in worship. And so it's not really good to be Swedish, I guess. Maybe you're not allowed to do those things there. I don't know. I can relate to that. I come from a northern tribe called Icelanders. We're serious people, right? We do serious things. We don't have time for fooling around. Well, there's joy in the presence of the Lord. There's joy in the presence of the Lord. It's not just the Africans' right to dance in the Spirit. It is everybody's right and privilege to dance in the Spirit. It's not just those expressive people from Taiwan. It's not just their privilege to give exuberant praise. It's ours too. And God is redeeming cultures, redeeming people, so that they will thrive in his presence. And when we worship God with intentionality, with expectation, with energy, passion, hunger, and desire, then we can expect rightly that his presence will be upon us. We worship in spirit and in truth. God's tangible presence touches us on earth. Psalm 22, verse 3, the scriptures there tell us that God inhabits the praises of his people. Another translation, God is enthroned upon the praises of Israel. That we're like creating an atmosphere, an environment when we're worshiping where the presence of God is suddenly attracted to that place and then he manifests himself. So do I long for that? Is my faith taking me further into that? If it isn't, I probably need to check what my faith is based on. Because every true believer, every person who has faith knows this, it's all about an encounter with the living God. He wants to show us how real he is. I'm not talking about basing your faith on feelings. Please don't think that. I'm talking about having a heart and a spirit that erupts with worship when the presence of God lands in your midst. I was texting our president, David Hearn, the leader of our family of churches in Canada, and just chatting with him, and he said he was down in Peru, and he was speaking at a conference there, and a lot of people were there for it. He gave one of his messages on the Holy Spirit and invited people to come up and be filled with the Spirit, which he did right here on May 8th. And he said 250 pastors ran to the front. I don't know if Peruvians run in worship, but they were running in worship that day. You see, all over the planet, God is visiting people in different places. He's pouring out his Spirit in these last days, it says in Joel chapter 2. Pouring out his presence. Where is it going to land? Who's going to host his presence? Who's going to welcome him? Who's going to say, Lord, you are the most important thing in our lives. We have no greater desire than you. I think those are the people that will receive the tangible presence of God. There's a way that you can experience how to do this. And I want to talk about how you live in the presence of God. And there's a little secret that I found in Psalm 89, verses 15 and 16. You can turn there. It's on page 591. And this passage here, I've incorporated into my daily devotional life. I probably say it out loud over myself probably 2-3 times a week. So here we go. Blessed are those who have learned to acclaim you, who walk in the light of your presence, Lord. They rejoice in your name all day long. Now look at those words carefully. This is a pattern for you to embrace, to live in the presence of God. Blessed are those who have learned to acclaim you. In other words, there's a skill here. There's something to be gained by experience. There's effort involved. They've learned to acclaim you, and that word means to boast of God. It's like the blowing of a trumpet. Back in the Old Testament days, when a king was coming, they'd blow the trumpets and say, get ready, the king is arriving, right? And then he'd show up. The same idea behind this word, that we acclaim God, that we invoke his name over us, that we proclaim his reality over our midst. Blessed are those who have learned to acclaim you, who walk in the light of your presence, Lord. The light of your presence. God's presence includes light. And we know lots about that from other parts of the Bible, right? If we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship one with another. We're walking in light when we're walking under God's presence. And then it says they rejoice in your name all day long. There's no interruption of this, right? There's no, oh, well, we had the presence of God on us for an hour and then back to normal. No, they rejoice in his name all day long. And I think you can do that. You know, you might have to be a little quiet about it at work sometimes, or you're just whispering at your desk, thank you, Lord, for your presence right here. Nobody else but me knows you're here, but it's awesome. You boast in God by doing that. We make choices every single day about whether we will walk in the presence of God or not. And the invitation is open to us. You can live there. Live there. Now. You don't have to wait to go to heaven to do it. You can live in the presence of God now. I say that because if the Old Testament believers could have the presence of God upon them, and these were people who were not born again of God's Spirit, they didn't have the Holy Spirit inside them. It was a different covenant. It was an old covenant. If those people could walk in the light of God's presence day after day after day, how much more you and me, who in this age, the age of the Spirit, have the presence of God already within us. Wow. Think of the possibilities. Jesus modeled this for us. In Luke's Gospel, chapter 3, it tells us he went down to the river and was baptized in water. And when he came up out of the water, he saw heaven being torn open and the Spirit of God, like a dove, descending and lighting upon him in bodily form. And he heard a voice from heaven. It was the voice of his father speaking, you are my son whom I love. With you I am well pleased. Jesus authenticated that moment as the new Adam, the last Adam, the new humanity. He, as the forerunner of our salvation, went into the river of baptism, came up out of the water, and receives the Spirit, receives the presence of God descending upon his life. I want to say this to you. That isn't just for Jesus. It's for all of us. The presence of God is to descend upon all of us as we surrender our lives to him. Jesus is simply the forerunner. He's the first one to inaugurate the new humanity. And maybe that's something that you need to experience in your life. Maybe you've never had that tangible encounter with the presence of God. Today can be your day. You can receive him. You and I both need the dove. He wants to rest on you and touch your life. He brings the kabod, the glory, the weight of God upon you. So that you're very, very conscious of it all the time. And it gives you great peace. We need the dove so much better than worry and fear and anxiety. Amen? So much better. But one last thing I want to ask you. Are you looking for God's presence? Someone put it this way, you seldom see what you're not looking for. And I think that statement is always true, except when it comes to men and refrigerators. There's something about that, right? When men open refrigerators, even young men, we've tested this in our house. We'd say to one of our sons, go find the bottle of ketchup. And they'd open it up, they'd go, Mom! Men can't see things sometimes. It's really mind-boggling. It's true. But you seldom see what you're not looking for. So if you're not looking for the presence of God, guess what? You're probably not going to see it. But if you're looking for it, and you're going, Lord, where are you? Where are you manifesting yourself? I know you're everywhere and I know you're with me. I get that, but I want to know, where are you right now? Like, where are you? If you're looking for him, you're going to notice him. He's going to show you where he is. He's going to just peel back things and you go, oh, you were in that. Yeah, I was in that. Well, they sure noticed the presence of God one day during King Solomon's time. You can turn to 2 Chronicles 5, page 432. Love this passage here. What a great, great account of the presence of God. Here's these group of people. They've built a building for God, a temple. David wanted to build it. God said, no, I'll let your son build it. So Solomon makes the temple. It's this elaborate worship facility, right? And when the temple work was done, then they bring the ark into the temple. The Ark of the Covenant was that box with the Ten Commandments in it and other things. They bring it into the holy place and set it down, right? They've got all the temple furniture in there. They've done sacrifices to prepare the way for worship. And then we pick it up in 2 Chronicles 5 at verse 13. The trumpeters and musicians joined in unison to give praise and thanks to the Lord. Accompanied by trumpets, cymbals, and other instruments, the singers raised their voices in praise to the Lord and sang, He is good, His love endures forever. Then the temple of the Lord was filled with the cloud. What cloud? It's the same cloud that appeared in Moses' tent of meeting. Here is God manifesting his presence again. The temple of the Lord was filled with the cloud, and the priests could not perform their service because of the cloud, for the glory of the Lord filled the temple of God. Wow. I don't know about you, but I want to live there. I want that to be my address. They sang this song. I don't know. It was such a simple little chorus. He is good, His love endures forever. I don't know what else you can say when God's presence is so strong. But it gets even better. Turn over the page to chapter 7, verse 1. It says, when Solomon finished praying, this is his dedication prayer for the temple. When Solomon finished praying, fire came down from heaven and consumed the burnt offering and the sacrifices, and the glory of the Lord filled the temple. The priests could not enter the temple of the Lord because the glory of the Lord filled it. When all the Israelites saw the fire coming down and the glory of the Lord above the temple, they knelt on the pavement with their faces to the ground, and they worshipped and gave thanks to the Lord, saying, He is good. His love endures forever. When God's presence is that thick, that strong, people get off the stage. It's because the conductor of the orchestra has arrived, and he's tuning everything for his glory. The priests could not perform their service because the glory of the Lord filled the temple. But you seldom see what you're not looking for. 20 years ago, as a younger pastor, I was up in Edmonton for a conference with our Alliance churches. And we had a whole week of meetings of worship and teaching and all that. And one of the guest speakers, whose name was Stuart McKnight, and I'm still in touch with Stuart, he spoke one night. And he came from a little place called Linden. Actually, he was from Scotland, but he ended up in Linden, Alberta, and a revival broke out in his church east of Airdrie. There were 400 people driving there every Sunday to go to church. He was the speaker, and on that second night of the conference, I'll never forget, the worship was so anointed. And I remember the presence of God at one moment in the song that we were singing came so strong on us that about 75 of us just went right down on our knees. We could feel the kabod, the glory of God in the room, just hovering over us. And we're weeping, and you know, what do you do in those situations? You just worship. You just sit in silence. And the worship team handled it well. They didn't try to wreck that moment. And later on, Stuart came up and preached, and it was a moment. And I talked to him later. I said, "How did you prepare for this?" He said, "Well, I've been fasting and praying, and you know, the spirit that was doing the revival in Linden just showed up in Edmonton. It was really easy to understand. But what got me the most was there was about 300 people there that didn't recognize it. There was a whole bunch of people that just thought, it's just an average conference. We're just here, we're just putting in time. They didn't see what others were seeing. You're only going to see what you look for. God wants to manifest his presence for his people. He does not want a dry, dead church in Canada, right? That brings him no glory. He wants to dwell in his people. In Alberta and BC and Quebec and the Maritimes and Ontario and Saskatchewan, everywhere, everywhere. From east to west and up north too. God wants to manifest his presence. It's his normal pattern for the church. You read the book of Acts and you'll see regularly they're just like, "Oh God, he just shows up in power and you know miracles occur and people's lives are radically changed." But let me bring it down to you personally. This is Jesus' invitation to you. John 14:21, he says, "He who has my commandments and keeps them, it is he who loves me. And he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him and manifest myself to him." The first time I read those words as a brand new Christian in 1978, I felt the presence of God through them. You have to long for it. You have to learn to live in it, and you got to look for it. The gospel of Jesus makes it possible for you to enjoy all this, inherit all this, to be a person who's filled with his dynamic presence. And then you sing over your life, "Soli Deo Gloria, all for the glory of God I live." Every decision, every moment, for him, my ultimate. I'm going to invite our worship team to come up. I'm going to share with you a verse that has really riveted my heart these last 6 months. It's from Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 14. It says, "The earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." And it's a statement about the end times in humanity, when God will make a new heaven and a new earth, when he will restore the brokenness of creation to an even better new reality. "The earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea." In other words, everyone will know that the presence of God has fully engulfed the whole thing. And people will be attuned to his presence like never before. Friends, every single day is a day towards that fulfillment. We're to live as a movement going further and further and further into that territory. To cry out for revival and renewal. To have a faith that leads us to an encounter with God's presence. I'm going to invite you to stand. We're going to sing together. It's a song of hunger and longing and desperation, as if saying, Lord, Lord, I want to know you more. I'm not satisfied. I am sort of, but I'm not really. More of you. I'm hungry for you. So let it be your prayer today as we sing this together.